Welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormRx, and while the care of patients with HIV largely takes place in specialty clinics, given the advancements in treatment and the use of antiretroviral therapy, or affectionately known as ART, people with HIV are living much, much longer. Indeed, many are now likely to live a near normal lifespan. And therefore, patients with HIV are developing chronic illnesses like hypertension and diabetes that are being managed in primary care settings. Thus, the ambulatory care specialists, while they may not be responsible for managing antiretroviral therapy in 2018, it's important to keep current on the latest advancements in treatment. Moreover, as antiretroviral therapy becomes more effective and easier to manage, we should anticipate there will be a day in the not too distant future when managing antiretroviral therapy will become the responsibility of primary care providers, not HIV specialists. A recent study published in January 2018 in The Lancet suggests that simpler and effective drug treatment regimens for HIV infection are becoming a reality. Here to talk about the SWORD 1 and SWORD 2 studies are Trinh Nguyen, or April Nguyen, and Jihei Lim. Both are postdoctoral fellows at Biogen and adjunct clinical faculty at MCPHS University in Boston, Massachusetts. April, Jihei, welcome to the iFormRx podcast.
Thanks so much for inviting us, Stuart. Hi, Stuart. Thanks for having us.
So before we get started, I want you to imagine you're seeing Ms. Q, a 47-year-old Caucasian female, in the primary care clinic today. And the patient was diagnosed with HIV more than 15 years ago, has been on several different antiretroviral regimens over the years. Her most recent CD4 count is 720 cells per millimeter cubed, and her viral load was less than 50 copies per ml. In addition to HIV, she has high blood pressure. She currently takes Genvoya, which contains four antiretroviral agents, elbitegravir, cobicistat, emtricitabine, and tenofovir. She takes Genvoya once daily with dinner, along with lisinopril and hydrochlorothiazide. Her blood pressure today is 122 over 74, and her pulse is 82. She weighs 154 pounds, and her weight has been stable over the past year, and her current BMI is 27.4. A fasting Chem7 drawn this morning reveals nothing remarkable. Her renal function appears to be normal, with an eGFR greater than 60 mils per minute, and her potassium is 4.4 MEQs per deciliter. So before we get into the specifics of the SWORD 1 and 2 studies, which you critically examined in your commentary, can you tell us a little bit more about some of the things going through your mind in this case? What additional information would you collect and address during this encounter? And are there any additional treatment options you'd be considering at this point?
So there are a few follow-up questions that would help us to understand Ms. Q's situation. And just kind of the first preliminary thoughts would be, she was diagnosed with HIV more than 15 years ago and has been on several different antiretroviral therapies. It would be interesting to kind of dig in deeper and find out what therapies she's actually been on. And also, since she is treatment experienced, it's important to figure out what her previous regimens were and if she discontinued them, why she did so. Was it due to resistance? Was it due to toxicity? This way we can properly determine whether or not Genvoya may be a good option for her. She's currently on it, and it seems like she is stable. Looking at her CD4 count and her viral load, it seems that she's being controlled on this regimen. And for patients who have experienced virologic failure before, this regimen is indicated as an appropriate alternative option. So it seems to be, from first glance, a good option. Some other tests that we might want to consider would be looking at her liver function, her AST-ALT, maybe a lipid panel, because the medications that are in Genvoya it would be important to kind of look at not only the renal function, but maybe hepatic function, looking at lipid panel, tenofovir, and also, more importantly, asking Ms. Q if she's experiencing any unpleasant side effects. So there are different treatment options, especially for those who have been on previous regimens, but it kind of is dependent on efficacy, toxicity, pill burden, like dosing frequency, drug-drug interactions with patients who have comorbidities and are on other medications. It'll also be dependent on resistance testing, access, cost. So there's a lot of different factors that go into selecting regimens. I guess the big focus is you want to have preferably three fully active agents. The guidelines don't quite specify like which agents are best to use, but to have three fully active agents. And usually you'll have two NRTIs and one INSTI. So those would be three different active agents.
So in the commentary you wrote for iFormRx entitled Cutting Down HIV Treatment to a Two-Drug Regimen, you critically examine the paper entitled Efficacy, Safety, and Tolerability of Dolutegravir and Rilpivirine for the Maintenance of Virological Suppression in Adults with HIV, a Phase 3 randomized non-inferior SWORD 1 and SWORD 2 studies, which was published in the January 8, 2018 issue of The Lancet. For those in our audience who haven't read the paper, can you give us a brief summary of the study design and its major findings?
Sure. So the SWORD 1 and SWORD 2 studies are essentially identically designed studies. They aim to test the hypothesis that a two-drug regimen of dolutegravir and rilpivirine would be non-inferior to standard antiretroviral therapy. So this was an open-label study with over 1,000 participants who were randomized in a one-to-one ratio of either continuing their current therapy or switching to the two-drug regimen. So patients in the experimental arm would receive 50 milligrams of dolutegravir and 25 milligrams of rilpivirine once daily to measure the primary outcome measure, which was the percentage of participants with plasma HIV RNA under 50 copies per milliliter at week 48 to determine if the treatment was non-inferior. Secondary outcome measures also included percentage of participants with plasma HIV RNA under 50 copies per milliliter at week 24, the number of participants with common non-serious adverse events, any serious events, adverse events leading to discontinuation. And at week 48, it was found that 486 participants in that treatment group had viral loads lower than 50 copies per milliliter, and 95% of the group who continue their current therapy also had viral loads lower than that count. 17 participants taking the experimental treatment ended up reporting adverse events leading to withdrawal. And overall, there was a low discontinuation rate and no resistance to the two-drug regimen. And the studies found that this two-drug regimen was not inferior to current antiretroviral therapies.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you believe to be the key strengths and limitations of the SWORD 1 and SWORD 2 studies. Are there any major sources of bias, confounders, or other threats to the internal validity of this study?
Sure, so I'll focus on limitations first, because there are a couple that I do think are important to note. There was a greater amount of adverse events and discontinuations in the group receiving dolutegravir and rilpivirine that could have been attributed to the open-label design, when people who are more stable on their current regimen and know that they're currently stable on their regimen and they're switched to a new one, they may be more alert for side effects and may be more active in reporting them. The dolutegravir and rilpivirine group also had more neuropsychiatric events leading to discontinuation than the group continuing their current regimen. Since we're looking at trying to conduct a study to see if this aging HIV population, who's at increased risk of multiple comorbidities, polypharmacy, associated drug-drug interactions and side effects, it's important to note from the baseline characteristics that the elderly are really underrepresented in this study, approximately only 28% of the participants enrolled. And that begs the question of whether the results of this study would really be generalizable to the elderly HIV population. But there are some key strengths in the study. The study's predefined non-inferiority margin was at 8%, which is a more stringent non-inferiority margin than used in previous studies at around 12%. And the study showed an even smaller difference in treatment results, which does strengthen the results of the trial. And there's lots of secondary endpoints, but the study was able to show these significant differences in both the secondary study endpoints as well as the primary endpoints, which does solidify the evidence of non-inferiority for this two-drug regimen.
So how should this information change practice? Do you think these findings are sufficiently compelling to consider this two-drug regimen to be among the first-line therapy treatments for HIV patients who've already achieved virological suppression with an initial regimen? Under what circumstances would this two-drug combination be preferred over other options? And would you consider recommending this to Ms. Q, that she switch, or should she continue her current regimen?
Combination antiretroviral therapy has really extended the lifespan of patients with HIV. So since ART is lifelong, we're going to look at treatments that prioritize a reduction in drug toxicity, long-term drug exposure, and minimize the cost of treatment. So in order to reduce the cumulative drug exposure and associated long-term drug-related toxicity, two drug regimens have been proposed. So the SWORD 1 and SWORD 2 trials are important in demonstrating the non-inferiority, safety, and efficacy of a two-drug regimen. That being said, I think this is definitely a great therapy to consider for patients who are very adherent. I think very little patients were lost to follow-up or discontinued due to non-adherence. However, in a real-world setting, that's not always the case, especially considering how rilpivirine has to be given with food for adequate absorption. And it's also important to look at the pricing of the two-drug regimens. If the combination is priced at a similar cost to the current three or four drug regimen, and the patient is already stable on it, such as Ms. Q, then there's really less benefit to switch to a newer regimen that may include dolutegravir and rilpivirine. It's also important to note if patients have a low renal function, then this two-drug regimen is a good option since the drugs are hepatically cleared, and the studies did find good bone and renal outcomes.
So I just want to add to that a little bit. So I think the key for HIV treatment is suppression of viral load. And I think this is really important when we're trying to deal with this disease in patients and determining what therapy actually works for them. So the SWORD trials, they proved that viral suppression was maintained. So we had an outcome and we met that outcome. Switching to a different drug regimen when there's already viral suppression, that can be done, and it's considered for a variety of different reasons. Maybe some patients want to simplify their regimen by reducing pill burden and dosing frequency. Maybe some patients aren't tolerating their current regimen well. Maybe there are some drug-drug interactions with comorbidities that patients have or may develop. Maybe there are some food or fluid requirements that may be with current regimens, and also looking at cost. I think specifically for our patient, Ms. Q, the only consideration that would determine whether or not she should be switching to dolutegravir and rilpivirine is whether or not she's experiencing major side effects with her current regimen. So based on the information that was provided earlier, I don't think it's necessary for Ms. Q at this time to switch. It seems that she's stable on Genvoya, but it's also really important for healthcare providers, especially physicians and pharmacists, to continually monitor patients for efficacy of the drug to see that the viral suppression is maintained, and also making sure that tolerability and adherence is maintained. So incomplete adherence can result from these complex medication regimens, comorbidities, health system issues. So it's important that, you know, we not only look at what the drug is doing for the patient in terms of suppressing viral load, but looking holistically at the picture.
Well, April, Jihe, I want to thank you both for joining me today to discuss the treatment of HIV infection and how drug treatment regimens have become simpler and easier to manage in recent years, and simpler for patients and clinicians too. It's clear from your comments that you believe two drug regimens have a future in the treatment of HIV, and that some patients likely be candidates for this. We're still learning a great deal about whether two drug regimens are sufficient in the long term, but they would reduce the risk of adverse events and drug interactions and may contribute to improved adherence. Well, tell us what you think. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.